Sometimes you just gotta think before you put something down on paper. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Barry, do you suppose we would be able to do this radio show if it weren't for the government?
I'm not really sure, because you do know that the government invented the internet, Charles. And then, of course, since we get our articles from the internet and we use Skype, which is an internet-based system, in order for us to record together, and since they approved the FCC for allowing us to have, for our radio station that plays us to have bandwidth, that the government's responsible for this message.
Yeah, right. I think we're going to dispel some of those myths by the end of today's show, hopefully.
I certainly hope so. But you know what? First of all, we're going to have to dispel a myth by proving how ridiculous it really is. This is what we do oftentimes, ladies and gentlemen, when we're working with logical fallacies or we're working on bad presuppositions that people and what we can call opinion makers hold, is you take their opinion and you take it to its logical conclusions. Then you show how wildly illogical and ridiculous it is, and then you bring them back using the foundations of absolute biblical truth in order to go back down and rebuild the foundations the correct way. Chuck, I've got a great candidate for us to use our method on, and this is a person by the name of Sally Cohn, or Khan, maybe. I'm not sure how you pronounce her last name, who is writing on FoxNews.com, of all places. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you've got some fixation that Fox News is a great bastion of conservatism because Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity are on there, I'm sorry, but you were going to have to dispel your myth there today. Because in the opinion section of FoxNews.com, Ms. Khan has published an opinion piece that goes against something that we talked about here earlier on this program. Do you remember, ladies and gentlemen, we talked about a speech that the president gave to some supporters in Roanoke, Virginia, where he basically said that anybody who has a business, somebody else did that for us, and what he implied was that government was the one who created our businesses and made them successful, that individual initiative couldn't have happened without government. Well, Chuck, you and I really, I think, unpacked that fairly clearly. But now, here comes Sally Cohn on the pages of Fox News. And again, this is one of those ones where people should really think before they put things down on paper and write them. And I guess anymore, it's just typing it into a blog and posting it. Because her defense of Barack Obama's comments is a textbook in logical fallacy deduction.
Oh, absolutely. Where do we start? Let's jump in. She talks about her grandfather, who was a small business entrepreneur. He owned a clothing store, and people came to him, and he kept people employed, two people who earned decent middle-class wages. Well, okay, let's talk about that. She's talking about 30 or 40 years ago.
Right.
How many locally owned clothing stores are there these days?
Well, you know, Charles, I'm not sure there are some, but they're not nearly as prevalent in our country as the chain stores are.
Exactly. I used to buy my suits at a place in Heath, Ohio, a little place called the Southgate Men's Shop. Long gone. Replaced now. If I want to buy a suit, I have to go to the men's warehouse.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I used to shop at a little men's clothier in Galpolis called Haskins Tanner. And, okay, and they also had all kinds of Boy Scout equipment in there as well. So
yes, exactly. Now, let me ask you a question. What put those places out of business?
What put those places out of business was usually their prices were significantly higher than the chain stores, because the chain stores can buy in volume.
That's part of it. What's the other part?
The other part was lack of selection.
Well, no. At the prices they were able to charge to remain competitive, they could not pay a decent wage.
Yes, that's also true.
To all the men that they had to have working in the place, because I remember there were always three or four guys in there. You go in, they'd measure you, they'd cut your suit. There was a tailor. There was a guy who measured you for the stuff. Now, why could they not afford to pay those guys? Well, let's look at it. Benefits and taxes. Who mandated the benefits and taxes?
I think that would be government.
The government. What she's arguing in favor of, she's saying that her grandfather paid 50% of his income in taxes to help make sure that good public schools and safe streets and the things we all need to succeed in America would be available for the next generation. Barry, why do we need to put 50% of our income in taxes for safe streets and public schools? First of all, I don't want to get into this. This is a series of shows. But the whole idea that somehow we need public schools to get education done, you and I are both prime examples of why that's not true. Because we homeschool our kids And our kids are smarter than the average bear. And they got smarter, at least my kids. I know you're a different story. You've never had yours in. It's amazing how quick they started picking up things when they weren't in public school anymore, when they were under my tutelage and my wife's tutelage.
Yes.
And the fact is that I was doing it for about between $400 and $600 a year rather than the $4,400 a year I pay into the public school system, in which I have no kids.
Yeah, but Chuck, let's go back, because we've missed a very basic logical fallacy already in Sally Cohn's argument. And, okay. And that is, she starts by saying that there were things that helped my grandfather's business that he didn't have to pay for. And she talks about the roads and the court systems and the police force and the public schools. So are you saying to me that when her grandfather paid his business taxes, his property taxes, and yes, because this is probably at least the 40s or 50s, his income taxes, that he wasn't paying for any of those things? Well, then I must ask Ms. Cohn, who do you think paid for that?
Who paid for it? The fact is, every time he got a shipment,
he paid for it.
He paid the charge that the trucking company charged him.
Or what we call the freight charges.
That's right. And they paid a road use tax, which built roads. Now, tell me how that's different. Let's talk about this road thing for a minute. Everybody keeps talking about roads. I've had this argument with a lot of people. You mean you want private companies to own the roads? And I said, yes. And they said, how can that be? And I said, because it would actually be cheaper to pay a fee to use a private road than it would be to pay the current road use taxes, of which a large percentage do not go into repairing the roads now. They go into the general fund. I just saw an article admitting that a huge amount of our road use taxes don't go into roads.
No, they do not.
They go into environmental initiatives and all this other stuff, which is basically the general fund. Okay, let's talk about that. And they said, how would you police that? I go, have you ever been to London? There are sensors all over the place. In London, they have sensors up. You pay a by-the-mile tax. They have things that read your car. They have a sensor that reads your car as you go past to see how many miles you've traveled, and you get to pay a tax on that. The fact is, that's no different than would be done by a private company.
No, absolutely not, Charles. It would be. But, you know, again, this is a situation where here we have someone who, on her own website, calls herself a pragmatic radical, which is code word for liberal, Charles.
Yes.
Who honestly is trying to make the case that Barack Obama is just out there to help us all. And, oh, my poor grandfather. And she says, make no mistake about it, my grandfather succeeded because of his hard work and initiative, but government played a supporting role. So government is supposed to be there to support us and to make us successful. In other words, Chuck, government's supposed to be there to pick winners and losers. But, of course, she says that poor government is being handcuffed. It's being throttled. It's being fought by evil corporate big business CEOs. See, she throws in probably one of the three best liberal trump cards besides race and gender, and that is the Marxist class warfare card.
Exactly. You have to play the class warfare card in order to get your argument across. What is one of the big Occupy arguments? We need a maximum wage.
Yes.
I've seen a couple of those signs out. We need a maximum wage. I want to go back to this original argument for a second. I want to ask you a question. Were you aware that the court system is where you go to get incorporated?
You know, honestly, I don't think that's the case, because I believe in the United States Constitution, in Article 1, it says that Congress is supposed to set up a system of patents and copyrights, and there are offices, and those are not the court system.
No, those are under the executive branch. The laws are created by Congress, and the executive branch enforces them.
Yes.
So the courts, that's your last resort. That's when you go to protect your patents. But the fact is, she's claiming that he never paid for the court system or any of the patents or any of that. Believe me, he paid a fee every time he bought a suit. If there was a patented item on that suit, he paid for it.
Had to.
Yeah, exactly. And the company that sold it to him paid a tax, and he paid a tax. So the idea that he didn't pay for those things is absurd. There's taxes all down the line, all through the distribution line. She's acting like there's somebody sitting at a machine going, here's your suit. No taxes. It comes directly from the manufacturer into the little shop that her grandfather ran. No middleman and no taxation in between. And basically her grandfather, just out of the magic of the air, got this suit that he sold. Well, come on. I mean, seriously, they basically accuse us of being simplistic thinkers, Barry.
Oh, yes.
This argument looks attractive to someone who has never, ever done anything beyond be a student, be a professional student, and, or taking money to hold a sign in a protest.
Right.
Clearly someone who never had a paper route or never had a job, or if they had a job, they didn't really pay any attention. They really think that when they get their tax refund back, it's money back from the government rather than the money that you overpaid them during the year. That's the kind of mentality that she's arguing to. And so, so much for us being the simplistic thinkers. I think we've got a handle on what's going on. She does not.
Well, and it gets very obvious because after she quotes, again, the president quote that we talked about on an earlier program, and crying about how he was taken out of context, she says, well, it's not either or. The president was clear. We succeed because of our individual initiative, but also because of the public investments that help springboard that success. Now, Chuck, I don't know about you, but I don't have too many public investments springboarding my business. She's looking at, well, here the government comes along and gives you this to help you with success. I've never seen the government really give anything that they didn't tax or put a fee to or regulate or limit your ability to engage in trade so that they could end up controlling it. But then she throws another great logical fallacy, Charles. She said, you don't believe me? Then go start a business in Pakistan or Russia. That's kind of a non sequitur, Charles, because we're talking about starting a business in the United States. Who cares about Pakistan or Russia or comparing the relative ease or difficulty of starting a business there versus in the United States? That honestly is an appeal to fear that she's throwing out there and a non sequitur argument, trying to make her case that, well, it's horrible there, so you should be grateful for all the government interference here in the United States.
Well, read the next line, though. And in America, we don't get ours and then yank away the ladder of opportunity for the next generation. That is exactly what she is defending being done.
Yes, it is.
Because these guys want to yank away that entrepreneurial ladder. Why would anyone risk anything? Barry, the only reason that there are risk takers is because there are potential rewards.
That's right.
That's the only reason to take a risk.
That's true. You're absolutely right, because the person who is rational in their thinking and logical, i.e. not a liberal who's depending on government to bail you out when you fail with stimulus and bailout money, are those people who look at the risks and determine whether or not to move forward and invest. And some of them are wiser than others. Some of them actually heed the counsel that the scriptural that says, before you build a building, consider the cost.
Now, let me show you how she doesn't get this. There's proof positive in this article.
Yes.
Jerry's Bargain Store went out of business after my grandfather died. Now people shop at a Walmart instead. Walmart's CEO, like most corporate executives today, is paid mostly in stock, which is taxed at a far lower rate than income. This is a disparaging remark, or at least an attempt at it.
Yes, it is.
Why do corporations pay their executives in stock?
Because it's an investment in the company, so when the company does well, the executives do better.
Bingo. They have a vested interest in making sure that the company is profitable, because the more profitable the company is, the more money the stock is worth, and the better they look on paper. Now, very often, these guys don't just up and sell their stock unless something happens, or unless they need a cash infusion, they'll go out and sell their company stock.
Oh, absolutely. Well, but the point is that Sally Khan is basically using this as a springboard for her own personal war against the evil big business CEOs, because she then starts wrapping her article up by basically saying, my grandfather built his business with his own two hands, ran it every day, paid far more than his due of taxes. Well, how does she know it's far more than his due?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that one right there kind of begs the question of, you think that certain people at certain levels should pay exorbitant amounts of taxes, but that your poor grandfather paid more than his due. See, that's that class warfare coming in again. And then she uses that he would be appalled that big business CEOs today aren't paying near their, here's the quote, fair share.
Fair according to whom? And the fact is that her grandfather never complained. Bet me. Bet me.
No, that's a sucker bet. But the point is that, okay, what she also talked about in this article, using a argument from fear, she starts in, well, we can slash Medicare and Social Security and public schools, blah, 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 and all of the stepping stones that poor and middle-class families have historically relied on to help climb the ladder of prosperity. Geez, Chuck, I didn't realize that Medicare and Social Security were actually stepping stones that help you climb the ladder of prosperity. I'm going to have to talk to my parents about this again, about their Medicare and their Social Security and whether or not it's making them inordinately rich. I may be coming into a great inheritance and just don't know it.
I think we're going to find out that there's a lot of lie in that particular statement.
I think so, too.
With that, I have to say we're way out of time. Join us for our Saturday show tomorrow at noon on Principles and Policies.